Hello and welcome to whatever this is. I've been calling it in my head. Phil and David talk about Barry. Keep it simple. I am the David of that part, but there's got to be a Phil, and there is a Phil. It's Phil Rude. Phil, hello.
That's a great name for it. I like that it's just straight to the point. You know, there's no mystery about what this is.
Yeah, you know, it's just us talking about Barry Koenig. That's how you pronounce his name? Before I tried that joke, I should have really brushed up on how to pronounce that name. No, it is us talking about the HBO show Barry. Phil and I, we talk about Westworld before Westworld had year-long breaks in between them. And then we did Brokeback Mountain, just talking about whatever. And at one point we were like, hey, let's talk about Barry, because it turned out we both love it.
Those were some of our last Brokeback episodes, I believe.
Yeah, and what a way to go out.
What a way to go out on a fantastic... boy, I guess we started and ended with HBO shows on there. So, you know, it's all good. All good. Consistency.
Yeah, there you go. So Barry is now in its third season. We are three episodes into the third season. Phil, we just talked about like doing something at some point. And I thought, you know, we'll get a couple episodes in and just kind of test the waters. See, maybe we'll do the rest of the episodes one by one. Maybe we'll come back a couple more times in the season. Who knows? We don't. All we know is that Barry is three episodes into its third season. Phil, I would love for you to give the pitch of Barry, to describe it as best you can, maybe to somebody who has not seen it.
As someone who tries to sell this show to people all the time, I'm getting pretty practiced at this.
All right, great.
Barry is the story of a hitman who goes to California to do a hit and accidentally kind of wanders into this acting class and discovers that he has a passion for acting, and it gives him a direction in life. And it's about his struggle to leave the world of murder for hire behind him and actually pursue the artistic life of an actor, and his struggle between those two worlds.
Fantastic. I would say that is a great job. You did.
Oh, thanks.
Great there. I think that definitely encapsulates the first couple of seasons. Things feel a little bit different here. So
we're a little a darker path at this point, but yeah.
Yeah. Before we get into it, I just want to highlight some of the main actors, main characters we'll be talking about here. We have Bill Hader playing the eponymous Barry Berkman, or Barry Block. Who plays the hitman trying to turn actor. You also have Stephen Root as Fuchs. Fuchs is the guy that like puts together the hits for Barry. They've been working together for years. He's like a family friend.
It's like his manager, sort of.
Right. All around unscrupulous guy, I would say. We also have Sarah Goldberg as Sally Reed, who is an actress that Barry met through the acting class and has been having a bit of her own success lately in this season. One of the most polarizing characters, I would say, in the show.
I think so.
We also have Anthony Carrigan as NoHo Hank. The greatest, the reason.
One of the best characters of all time.
As great as the show is generally, it is infinitely better because of NoHo Hank.
I love Anthony Carrigan in this role. I've heard a couple interviews with him. He's a super funny guy anyway. And God, he just kind of steals this whole show. I love NoHo Hank so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's so great. I already want to mention, because I knew I had to, that in the first episode when they are showing pictures to NoHo Hank, and one of them is just him. He's on a cell phone, and his like leg is up on a car, and his head is kind of thrown back in this like big laugh, and it's just the image is so funny.
It's the image that totally encapsulates that character.
Exactly, yeah. So awkward, but so confident at the same time. He's great. And we've got Henry Winkler playing Gene Cousineau, who was the acting coach slash teacher that Barry and Sally met under. He's become something of a father figure to Barry over the last couple of seasons. There's a couple other really great actors in here. Darcy Carden continues to show up as Natalie. Paula Newsom was from season one. She played Janice Moss, still an important character. And also this season, because we're going to be talking about her, I want to bring up Elsie Fisher, who plays Katie. Who is the young actress from eighth grade? I did not realize.
Yeah. Before the new season started airing, Austin, who loves eighth grade, and I've seen eighth grade several times, he is really on top of what I didn't even know she was in Barry as much as I was anticipating this season. Mm-hmm. And he goes, "Oh, hey, I just heard Elsie Fisher is in the new season of Barry." And I'm like, "Oh, I had no idea." Mm. And I kind of expected like a small role. She plays a pretty pivotal role in this, at least in the first three episodes. I mean, it's supporting, but she is playing a definite part in how things are going to play out, I think.
Oh, big time. I don't want to jump too much into theories for the season just yet, but I've got some big ones concerning her.
Okay.
So at the end of last season, it ended with Barry murdering a whole bunch of people, just to put it mildly. A bunch of like Chechens and the Bolivians, you know, people that we'd consider maybe, you know, more bad guys. Not Bolivians and Chechens, but like mobsters.
There's a Asian mob too. There's like three mobs coming together in season two, and he like slaughters most of them.
Yeah. And this season opens up, we see that Barry, now without Fuchs, because Fuchs is on the run, is striking out on his own, just doing kind of some independent hit jobs. And he seems, you know, Barry is very lost. He's a character that's always been kind of lost, but I would say he's at his most lost currently.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking to see I don't know if you rewatched season one and two leading up to this.
Not too long ago. I'm not like, not within the last like month or so, but you know, not too long ago.
Yeah. About a month ago, I did a big binge of these two just leading up to it. But it is, when we see him right at the beginning of the pilot episode, he's very kind of apathetic. And in this one, I would say he's even more lost because he's in just a way darker place. I think he's just really flailing. And there's something about the way Bill Hader plays it that conveys that. He plays it so good because it's just quiet and you can kind of tell where he's at.
Oh, yeah. Bill Hader deserves an Emmy for
this
role.
He's so good in this show.
This is the best thing that he's done. Obviously, like he created it, but I don't think like he didn't necessarily think of himself in the role. And I think there was some fun thing where it's like, Alec Berg, who's like his co-creator, was like, nobody is going to want to watch a show about this like hitman trying to become an actor. And Bill Hader's like, well, what if it was me? And turns out we did.
That was it. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, the beginning of this season, he's standing there eating a donut in the desert as somebody is running around wanting to cut off a guy's eyelids. You know, it's just a very, I think Barry's been kind of known for its kind of stark openings. Each one has always started with a hit. Now that I think about it. So that's always been kind of like an integral part of the show. And then there's no forgiving Jeff in this world.
Or is there?
But he shot Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's you can't forget. He's trying. He's like, we worked it out. It's a really hilarious. And then Barry just does the coldest thing, you know.
Yeah.
It's really wild.
Just shoots him twice and then just yells, there's no forgiving Jeff.
No forgiving Jeff.
And And boy, I mean, like, it's hard not to want to spend all the time talking about the journey that Barry is currently on. But just through these next, like, three episodes, I mean, the end of the second episode, woof. After he spent the whole episode trying to get Kusino on his side to varying degrees, and then, you know, probably.
I was trying to remember the how the second episode. Oh, yeah, it's I think, easily the darkest we've seen Barry get.
Yeah, the most harrowing moment in TV when he says, if you try to go to anybody, I'm going to kill your family. I mean, not in so many words, but that's basically what he says.
I mean, when you look at the what's the episode where he spent the whole time fighting the guy?
Ronnie Lily?
Yes. When Fuchs was like, you got to kill the little girl because she saw you. And he's refusing, you know, obviously, like, that's the line you don't want your character to cross. And then he's just sitting there coldly threatening Gene in this season, saying, like, if you don't cooperate and just take this part, I will. And he's sitting right next to a child and just saying, I will murder everybody in this house. Yeah. And he says it in a way that you believe him. It's a really, really dark moment.
And then he turns around and he does that thing of like, he says, do you love me, Mr. Kusino? Because,
oh God, yes.
he is still trying to get that. I guess that redemption, he thinks like the redemption's going to come through fixing his relationship with Mr. Kusino, who, was dating Janice, who Barry murdered and Kusino now knows and is well aware of. But Barry's like convinced, if I can just get this relationship fixed, then it's fine. It's okay.
He's acting like it's a rough patch in their relationship that they just have to get over.
Yes.
It's like, dude, you murdered the love of his life. He says it multiple times. And it's just such a... I think it shows you how disconnected Barry is.
Oh, like, 100%.
That he just doesn't have any sense of how an actual human relationship works.
No. Not in the slightest. And speaking of relationships, he's in a relationship with Sally, and then he had a very frightening outburst that led to some, I one of the most, I think, kind of interesting moments of, like, for the character of Sally overall, just like her reaction to all of that and the way that that carried over.
Are you talking about her immediate reaction or her reaction throughout the day as she tried to keep things calm?
Well, her immediate reaction.
Trying to order from the kids' menu to find him a meal he would like.
Yeah, her immediate reaction is just like, well, okay, this is like scary, so I'm just going to kind of be quiet here, which is like, it's a normal reaction. Anybody would have that. But then, she immediately goes into like, oh, I need to make sure Barry's happy, even though he just yelled at me in front of everyone.
Yeah, the way it all, there are so many angles to the reactions to Barry's outburst that I find interesting in so many ways, that like the fact that it happens in the offices of a TV show about abusive relationships. And that Sally is become sort of like this poster child for surviving abusive relationships. And here's her boyfriend screaming at her and she just sort of like rolls with it in the way that it almost like she hasn't moved on from that point in her life. And then you have like later on, Elsie Fisher is talking about like, I think he's violent. And there's also like this very disconnect between like what a pedestrian person thinks a violent person is and what in, I'm going to word this poorly. I know that there are different levels of violence, but like she has no idea how violent he is. You know what I mean? Like he's a legitimately dangerous person to society, not just in a, like within a relationship structure. Not to downplay that at all. I'm sorry. I'm stumbling on how to word this, but like the disconnect between those things, there's just so many things up in the air. Sally's reaction to it, the way she, oh, I got you a new game controller, and all of these weird things that she's doing to try to just make peace offerings. Mm-hmm. It's very uncomfortable to watch. From a way I've loved Barry the character for two seasons, I'm very like unsettled by all of the everything that's going on in season three.
Yeah. Yeah. They did such a great job of making you think like, okay, yeah, you know, he's manipulated by Fuchs for all these years. But he can still, you know, he can still find redemption. And like, you know, like he's killing people, but like it's, you know, they're mobsters and, you know, you can kind of like not necessarily rationalize, but it's like, well, you know, they're people like, he's not shooting innocent people. He shoots Chris. And that's like a, but okay, maybe there's still, oh, then he shoots Janice. And it's like, okay, well.
You understand his reasons for shooting Chris and Janice. Uh-huh. I mean, it's not justifiable, but you can understand how in his mind, he's like, I have to do this in order to, I have to cut any trace of this old life that may follow me.
Yeah.
And it's not justifiable, but it is in his mind, and you kind of understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, it is 100% self-preservation each time.
Yes.
And like you said, you understand it, but it becomes less and less like, I can look past this one, Barry. It's getting a little harder to do that as time goes on.
Him shooting Chris is just, up till now, I think the worst point in this. Not that Janice was any better, but like, you see the Facebook posts of like the Chris, the fun run, his memorial fun run, and Barry's there like being a part of it. And it's just like, oh my God, this is just complete, again, disconnect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's 100% different from what we're seeing right now of him like doing hits that he finds on Craigslist. Uh-huh. And staying up all night playing video games and just screaming at Sally over, you know, that she won't cast automatically cast Gene on her show. And it's just it's such a different Barry, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is because Barry's self-worth was found in killing people. He discovered that when he was in the military.
Right.
And Fuchs exploited that. And so Barry has been struggling to find like new self-worth and like was finding it a little bit in acting. But because of the events, I would say, of the end of season two, he's now still a little bit more wayward. And just he's really struggling still to try to find that purpose, but it's like slipping away from him, you know, like a way to reasonably find that purpose is just going away.
And yeah, he doesn't have his class anymore. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, even before like Gene pulled the stage gun that Rip Taylor gave him.
Oh man, it just falls apart. Yeah. I love that it was from Rip Taylor. That was a great bit.
You get a sense that it, you know, the acting class stopped, and that was because I the thing I've loved about this show is like Barry loves acting and he loves doing the work of acting, but he's not a good actor.
Not at
like
all.
He's not even close to good at it, but he's found purpose just in doing the work, and I really appreciate that about that. They didn't make it so that like, oh, this has been Barry's hidden talent all along. It's just, right. He enjoys doing something constructive instead of something destructive.
And he's 6'3" or whatever it was. Right. So that qualifies him for a lot of roles.
For swim instructors.
Yeah. Two funny guys, that'll never, or two short guys, that'll never be funny.
That'll never be funny,
which,
yes.
I don't know if you saw, I just saw this today, that Josh Gad actually tweeted that he was very excited to star in Swim Instructors with Adam Devine.
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
I do like, speaking of that scene where he goes back to, I don't remember what he goes back to that office for.
He's trying to get Gene.
That's
job.
Right. Yeah. He goes to get him the audition, and we get a glimpse of the fact that Gene is also like a really unstable.
Oh,
they're like,
yeah.
Gene Cousineau, the guy who brought a loaded gun to the Full House audition, and he like attacks PAs and stuff like that. And it's just sort of like Gene has this wild reputation in Hollywood as he's basically been blacklisted because he's unstable and unpredictable. And I thought that was a fascinating look into a character you knew wasn't all there, mm-hmm. but he just always struck me as more eccentric than, oh, this guy's legitimately dangerous too.
Right. Yeah. They reveal that a little bit throughout this season in some really great ways. Cause you think like, okay, he's just really egotistical. So he's like probably turned some people against him just cause he thinks he should be this big star. But then in this episode, the last episode, episode three, when the director, I think it's the director of the episode, comes to talk to him, like, do you remember me? I was a PA on Murder, She Wrote. You attacked me. And he's like, I'm going to need more. Like, he can't remember. Oh, I attacked you. I attacked so many people.
Yeah. It's, I love that more and more is revealed about these characters, the more time we spend with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've read some theories that I'm starting to kind of get behind that Gene's little outburst there, because he was supposed to have one little line in the show, something like, oh, thank you or whatever.
Right.
But he doesn't. Instead, he like gets up and he physically reacts to Barry. He slaps him and he says something and he storms off. And I saw some people saying like, that's probably, they're probably going to rework the episode so that line makes sense. And like probably have him back like as a character on the show again. And so like, even though he's rejecting Barry's help, it's actually going to kind of work.
That is, that honestly makes a lot of sense. The idea that he may end up actually owing a big comeback to Barry, who he also hates. Like, uh-huh. there's a lot of really interesting possibilities with that. I like that. I like that. Normally I don't look at fan theories very much, but I do like that.
Yeah.
Now that I'm hearing it, I'm like, that could actually play out really interesting, I think.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. There's some other stuff that I think will be kind of coming their way on that. Real quick, I do want to talk about the laws of humanity. First of all, Mark Paul Gosselaar is there, which just surprised me to see Saved by the Bell hanging out. And then the show... His name is Hugh Manatee.
Hugh Manatee. Call me Hugh.
So, like, this season hasn't been as heavy on, like, the direct comedy, but I think, like, some of the little bits that have been there have just been so good. Like, Hugh Manatee, in the last episode, in episode two, there was, you have too many dogs.
Oh, my God. That I could not stop laughing at just that entire sequence was... so hilarious.
It was perfect. It was
it really was.
Yeah, you see he runs by that window and there's the couple breaking up, and then you see like one dog coming after him, and it just cuts back and she says, you have too many dogs, and there's just an endless
never-ending stream of dogs.
while he's running for his life from Barry, and it just was great. And also had the line of he ordered milk, that woman who was just walking down the street before the Bolivians were going to hit the Chechenian stash house, or not the stash house, but like their front, which I love. Is just a nursery called Plants. Yeah. It's just a big sign, Plants.
I love everything about that scene where Gene is running from Barry, and that he shows up and he's been torn up by dogs, and he looks like a homeless person, and I mean, he looks like a lunatic, and he's like, can you call me an internet taxi? And the waitress who initially wants to help him, like, slowly just kind of realizes he's insane and backs away from him. And the way it all plays out and is timed perfectly, I think is just so brilliant. That episode was so good.
Yeah, even though it had like one of the darkest endings.
The darkest ending, it had some of the funniest comedy, I think, as well.
Yeah, which it needed it. Oh man, did it need it.
Yes.
A few times. Like Barry giving the change back to Gene after, who he's keeping hostage, but he's like, I got your change.
When he buys the food?
Yeah. Oh, it's
Barry, I can't drink that in the trunk.
Yeah. It's so, man, it's so great. Henry Winkler also should be getting awards. You know, he was the Fonz, and then he was the lawyer in Arrested Development. And
oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Then just to see him here, like, acting his heart out, you know, like
he's so good in this. Yeah.
Yeah. He's always been good as Gene. He's always brought that kind of energy to Gene. But now, like, he's playing with such a more somber feel. And it still feels like Gene. This is what Gene would feel like if he was angry and depressed. And oh, it's just so good.
He is like, I don't know if you ever see or hear interviews with Henry Winkler. He's like the most upbeat guy.
I believe it.
And that energy is in Gene. He always has like this manic energy. But the turn from like the end of season two and so far in season three is such a 180 from that. And I think it really shows like Henry Winkler's range to have that manic energy. And then, I mean, there's like a real sadness that just this dark cloud. He's still got the energy, but it's very different. The tone of his whole character is different. Mm-hmm. And not in a way like that the character isn't who he is at his core all the way through. It's just a really, it's a great and wide-ranging performance, I think.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely agree. He is fantastic. Speaking of some extra character depth, they've been given some to NoHo Hank this season.
We've got to talk about Hank and Cristobal and their development as well.
Yeah, I mean, so it was pretty heavily hinted at in season two that they were like into each other. And then the beginning of the season just confirms they're into each other and together at the start of the season. But of course, not all good things can last for NoHo Hank.
No, they can't. Just on that note, initially, I loved the unspoken. I'll compare it to like Bert and Ernie, you know, like the Bert and Ernie, of course, they're gay cohabitating Muppets, but it's never really confirmed. It's just sort of like, yeah, everybody knows it's under the surface. It's there, but it's not commented on. Mm-hmm. And I love that part of NoHo Hank and Cristobal, just that it was sort of like this almost ongoing joke. So I didn't ever want it to blatantly happen. But when it did, they're almost just like the cutest TV couple as these mobsters. Yeah. And it's just sort of like, yeah, okay, I like this. They're very domestic and it's just the polite mobsters, of course, would have the most suburbanite domestic life together. Yeah. And I just, it's so charming.
Yeah. And the first thing that NoHo Hank does when he comes home is tell him, I had my first interrogation today.
Oh
yeah. And it's the most normal conversation. Like I had the meeting with my boss and I got the raise, but it's like, I got interrogated by the police and it went great.
Yeah. Every conversation it is had that way. It's like, how was work today? And oh, I'm getting emails about properties in Santa Fe. And he's like, hold on, we got to settle this thing. Barry killed all my friends and yeah. We got to settle all this first. And right. It's talked about the way my wife and I talk about, hey, how was work today? Hey, we want to go do this weekend. And it's just, I don't know. There's something really funny about it
there. Yeah. It's great. And then the head of the Bolivian crime family shows up and it turns out that, Cristobal obviously has been a bit AWOL, but also I think one of the most interesting revelations is that Cristobal like has a family.
Yes.
And obviously like it seemed like he can't be himself there. So he's kind of stayed in LA to be with NoHo Hank where he's happy, but now responsibility in many forms has come calling.
I think that is such an interesting development to have the whole Bolivian mob just sort of drop on his doorstep. And then he has to kind of hide that, you know, he has this gay romance with Hank, but also that he's just been kind of hanging out and that, you know, like they're not in some mob war with the Chechens and I don't know. It creates a real tension there. Mm-hmm. But it's also great to see that, like, basically every mobster in this show is like a very friendly, boisterous, gregarious guy. they're all just very friendly. They want to party, and it's really just shatters the mobster stereotype.
Yeah, well, even Goran from the first season, you know, he was trying to be tough, but like he's still like he has his family there. And they're like a little bit bumbling, but like obviously, you know, they're still like mobsters, so they're down to do some horrible things. But yeah, he's like he's a little bit domesticated. He's they're very polite whenever people are coming over. There's just like you would think like the mobsters would be where all the heaviness would come from, but they're like more the comedic relief a lot of the time than anything else.
Yeah, they even when the Bolivians go to raid the front company, Noho Hank gets them out of there by taking them on a like Hollywood tour bus.
Yes.
Which is the silliest, excuse for leaving your front company.
Yeah.
But just, I mean, there's just like, so it leads it open to so many gags like that I love it. I love that. You still understand, like, yeah, they will kill you, and it is dangerous, but also, yeah, they're just regular guys.
Yeah, there's still stakes to it. I'm glad you said that, because, like, that's how I was feeling. Like, there's still stakes to their characters.
Yes.
Like, because one of the last interactions, this last episode, by the way, felt like 15 minutes. It just, like, blew by.
Dude, it was over so fast.
Yeah, too soon, I would say. But... you know, it seems like, oh, okay, someone's kind of on to Hank. Like, there's gonna be some repercussions for what's going on. And of course, Fuchs is about to come back on the scene, and who knows what madness that's gonna cause.
We haven't seen much of Fuchs this season, but I've really liked what we have seen. The shot of him walking out to the goat to put milk on his cereal in when we first see him is just the funniest. I'm like, where is he going? Why is he carrying a bowl? It just goes out to milk a goat directly on the cereal bowl. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, like we're kind of seeing it like, oh, he kind of likes it there.
Yeah.
And like, what does this mean for where all of this is going?
Yeah. Yeah. And he still cares so much about Barry caring about him, because like that's what makes him call, is because Noho Hank is like, oh yeah, I saw Barry. He doesn't, you know, he didn't ask about you. He doesn't even, whatever, he's over it. And right. So Fuchs like can't help himself, and he calls Barry, and they have this brief conversation, and then hang up, and then he calls right back, and he's like, I'm dying. He just wants, he still wants Barry to think about him. Like he enjoys having power over Barry and just can't let that go.
They have the strangest relationship through the whole series, because like he sends Barry in season one, he sends him on like two suicide missions.
Yeah.
Where he fully expects Barry to be killed, but he still sends him. And then he like sits at the hotel and cries because, oh, Barry's gonna die. And it's just such a strange dynamic between the two of them. Mm-hmm. The whole reason he rats out Barry to Kusino is because he's jealous that he sees Kusino as more of a father figure than Fuchs. Yeah. And it's there's a lot of jealousy, and there's a lot of just weird emotions in that dynamic, because you never know exactly. You don't think he really cares about Barry until he gets pissed off about something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Steven Root. I mean, this show
is so good.
Yeah. Full of fantastic actors and great performances. And like, I didn't know Sarah Goldberg before this, but you know, she's standing up with the best of them here. And just everyone in this show is just perfectly cast. It's great. They've just done such a great job with these characters and giving all these characters depth. because, like, I know that a lot of people dislike Sally and, you know, whatever, but I think there is, like, a lot to her character that, like, yeah, maybe I don't love her personality, but, like, I understand her as a person and have empathy and sympathy for her.
Yeah, it's not easy to play, and I'll call Sally. Maybe unlikable is not a great word, but she's so self-centered, and she's so just self-centered, and it's hard to like a character who likes themselves too much, I think. And mm-hmm. I find Sally to be kind of off-putting. I don't really care for her, but I do. You can't knock the performance that Sarah Goldberg's giving.
No,
it takes a lot to play mm-hmm. to play that, and to not have you just like, oh man, every time she's on screen, like, you have to have some charisma about it. And I think she does that. You're not turned off when she's on screen. It's almost entertaining to watch her be this manic ball of ego, you know, and just be sort of wrapped up in herself that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in season two, you get a lot of, like, her backstory of why she kind of is the way that she is,
right,
because of, like, her history. And just like I said, it's like just adding this depth and these more layers to these characters. Is there anything that we haven't talked about yet in these first three? I mean, there's so much. We really, we kind of talked about, like, doing this episode by episode, and I was like, well, we'll just kind of see. Now I'm like, maybe we should do this episode by episode, because we're really
almost, yeah,
getting broad strokes. But is there anything we haven't talked about yet that you want to bring up?
I think some of the execution of some of the more, like, technical things in this, like, there's an episode of, I think it's in the first episode of the season, where Sally gets to the set of her new TV show, and there's, like, this tracking shot.
Oh yeah.
Where she's walking through all the sets, and it's following her, and she's, you know, a producer on the show, so she's making all these decisions as she goes. And then she steps off the set, and it's completely dark and completely quiet. And then like the red quiet on set light, I guess, comes on, and it silhouettes her. There's just some beautiful shots and some unreal, like, technical work going on this show.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't think that's new to this season. But I've just I rewatched the first episode of the season again today. I was just blown away by that shot, man.
Oh yeah. It was really good. It's just great, 'cause it also, you know, you don't think about how many people are involved in a TV show.
Yeah.
Like, even, like, those shots of where it's Barry and Jean just out in the desert, you know, behind the camera, there's, like, 20 guys.
Right.
Just, like, standing around, 20 people waiting to, like, you know, do whatever. And so, like, these scenes, like, these incredibly intimate scenes, you know, just out, and they kind of showed, like, shooting a couple of them. You could see just, like, because we're not seeing it how they're going to shoot it for the show, but we're seeing, like, oh, there they are, just off the set. There's, like, 15 people right there.
Yeah. Yeah, like, Barry shows up, and everyone's, like, shh, you know, telling him to be quiet. Yeah. And it is just sort of like, man, like, that's the amazing thing when you think about it. And this isn't even about Barry. It's just about TV in general. Like, they're filming, and you have all those people on set, and they all understand to be quiet.
Yeah.
It's like, man, that is so hard to do in real life, but in this place, that works. It's really cool.
Yeah. Now, I want to ask you about any theories you might have for this upcoming season, but before I do, I just have one question. Who do you think is going to be the next Spider-Man?
It's Ben Mendelsohn, obviously.
100%.
Still hilarious.
I love the guy's reaction. Just like, huh. Okay. Like, what a stupid question to ask. You know, you're trying to be the different person, and you come in, you're asking this woman whose show is about abuse who's going to be the next Spider-Man.
Right.
Anyway.
But I love that sequence just because it made fun of, like, press junk and interviews. So, you know, like, all those clips when people are promoting movies and stuff. And it's like, yeah, they just sit in there and people come in and ask them the same questions all day. Mm-hmm. And then you get oh, you know, who do you think's been? I'm always blown away when someone like answers that. And I'm like, you know, when it's someone like Benedict Cumberbatch, I'm like, you're in like everything. How do you even have time to watch a single movie and be up on top of any of that?
Oh, yeah. I'm certain many of them, in fact, are not.
Yes. No way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that. And I love, I mean, first of all, I would watch Ben Mendelsohn.
Oh, yes. 100%.
Yes. I'm back on board with the MCU if Ben Mendelsohn becomes the next Spider-Man.
Get Ben Mendelsohn in here for any, just get him on Barry. That'd be great. Though I
hope he does show up on Barry. When they mention people like Jay Roach, like they show up on Barry. So it's I wonder if that's going to happen. Well, he's an HBO guy.
And I really like, I appreciate it because when they did The Laws of Humanity and Mark Paul Gosselaar's there, I was like, oh, Mark Paul Gosselaar is starring in the show. But like they didn't ever really talk about it. They weren't like, oh, here's Mark Paul Gosselaar. It's just like my brain, like, okay, yeah, this is a show, and in this world, Mark Paul Gosselaar is the main character.
It's the guy, yeah.
Yeah. Humanity.
I love the scene. I loved it right before they start shooting. And he goes, so you were a Marine, huh? And he's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I do CrossFit with a couple Marines. And they basically said, I could have been a Marine.
Yeah.
And I don't know who's writing this show and where they're pulling. I'm a former Marine. And I hear when people learn that, I hear that so often. I could have done that. I could have been a Marine. And it's just sort of like, yeah, I'm sure you could have. Like, you don't have to like prove anything.
Yeah.
It's just, it is so niche, but also so true to life that someone in the writer's room, knows to put that line in there because that's a line Barry is going to encounter somewhere.
Yeah, I have to wonder how much Bill Hader and Alec Berg, like, they must have a consultant that was a Marine or something.
Something, yeah.
Like
whenever people in military movies like get the language, the really like niche slang, and they have it down, it's like, yeah, somebody who was in that organization is working on this show because nobody would just know that or know how to use that. So, yeah, that's impressive to me.
Yeah, and like in the first season when Barry and Chris are just standing around and they're just like, they're just having a super normal conversation, but they're just saying like the F word continuously.
Yes.
Like as if it's nothing. I was like, yeah, okay, I believe that. Yeah. That is how like two guys who are in the Army together or in the Marines together, getting together and just talk.
And the two meatheads that were hanging out with them. God. It's like, yeah, those guys are real too.
Taylor and Vaughn. I don't know why I remember their names, but Taylor and Vaughn. All right. What theories do we have for this upcoming season? And I don't want to spend too much. This isn't a Westworld, but I think they're definitely foreshadowing and setting some stuff up here. So just where do you think we're going from here?
I mean, I hadn't considered the Gene Cousineau one, but I really like that one now. But I think the big one is like how in danger is Elsie Fisher's character going to be by coming forward with she's starting to wonder more and more about exactly how violent Barry is. She just learned from Natalie that he's a war veteran and that he has killed people. And so it's sort of, you can see her wheels turning. And just from what we know about what happens to people who figure out who Barry is, you have to kind of go, is that going to put her in danger to where she meets her end, or is that going to be another crossroads for Barry?
Yeah, that's my number one question too. I could see her ending up dead by the end of this season. And that could maybe be like how Sally kind of finds out about all of this and then like has to confront that reality and whatever that might mean. I think too, like, 'cause I really get the strong feeling that, Katie is about to try to go out there and like tell everybody about Barry. Just like, oh, you know, he's violent, possibly like abusive. And I think, I think there's, that's going to bring some attention to him, but then it's going to go into the whole, like, oh, he's a vet with severe PTSD. And that's actually going to like boost his star more than anything.
Yeah, there's that possibility. There's also the idea of like, what does this do to Sally's career?
Yeah.
If sort of it comes to light that like, oh, she's in an abusive relationship when she claims to have risen above, you know what I mean? Like the way the politics of that and the possibilities of that. I also have to wonder if Barry just sort of like the thing that's really I'm trying to figure out is like he keeps seeing bullet holes show up
in people's
heads. And it's just, is he coming to the realization that he is going to have to murder everybody who is close to him, or that everyone around him is in danger, that he's the, is he coming to the realization that he is the problem? And, I'm not sure about any of that, but it's all stuff I'm kind of wondering about.
Yeah. It'll be very interesting to see. I'm really curious to see because they're setting up a lot of stuff and a lot of things are going to happen. And before, when all these things were happening to Barry, you know, there wasn't really a lot of attention on him. So it could kind of just get brushed off. But now he's showing up on major shows. Sally's got her own show. I think some big things are coming, and how Barry is going to react to that. I think the redemption arc is gone until he's ready to take responsibility for his actions.
Well, he's about to get involved with the mob war too, because he just got called off the bench for that. So, you know, that's a whole other set of plot points right there, is the Chechens and the Bolivians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll see how it plays out. And, perhaps Phil and I will, be back to talk about how it's all playing out. If you'd like to hear more about it, let us know. We don't have anything set up specifically for this show, but we'll tell you the various ways that you can get in touch with us. I'm going to be releasing this on like the Hit Me feed. I figured I'd send it your way if you want to toss it up on Picture Show or whatever you want to do it with it as well, Phil.
It's only up to you. Yeah, I might do that just because I have to get my theories and my thoughts about this show out as many ways as I can.
You know, that's how I feel. Yeah, I didn't think this would be like we would have our own feed for it. It would just kind of be like a thing that shows up on the other stuff we're doing.
Sure.
And maybe, I don't know. We'll figure it out. We're just playing it by ear.
We'll figure it out. Yeah, we'll talk
about
it.
If people want to find out, Phil, more of what you are doing, what you're up to, how can they do that?
You can listen to my podcast. It is The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. It's me and my son, Austin. We talk about movies. We are just wrapping up season 4 right now. But we have a huge backlog. You can go check that out. You can also find me on Twitter at Phil Rude and just shout at me. Whatever you think about Barry, whatever you think about what I said here or what I said anywhere, just hit me up there.
Yes, let them know. If you want to find me, it's Davluz, DAVLUZ, Twitter and Instagram. You can also find me. Hit me one more time. I mentioned it earlier. That's a show that I've got going on. So check it out. And that's going to do it for us here. And we'll talk to you next time we talk about Barry.
See ya.